Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, more than 3,000 adults in Ireland are considered wards of court. This means the courts have decided they are mentally incapable of managing their own finances. The 19th Century Lunacy Act, which underpins the system, is considered outdated, and in 2015, the Oireachtas passed new legislation to overhaul it. But 5 years on, the old system is still in place, and a new one won't be up and running for at least another 2 years. Now, in a moment, I'll speak to the woman charged with running the replacement system. She's worried that even that deadline may not be met. But first, let's hear from somebody who was herself a ward of court for 2 years. After she left school, Claire Hendrick was a carer for her mother for 5 years. But after her mother died, the family home was sold and Claire became homeless for 4 years.
2010, I was made a ward of court because, yes, I do have an intellectual learning disability and I'll never dispute with that. But I was still grieving for my mum. My mum had died in 2006. And of course, you know yourself, if you have a disability or anything like that, I need time to process things. Then I rang the solicitor for an update. He said, you know, you have to be made a ward of court, your life will be changed, they make all the decisions for you. So there was one committee that held your money, and, you know, I wasn't allowed to have bank statements, I wasn't allowed to have my passport, I wasn't allowed to have a bank account. But basically, you're a person in society, but you have no rights. All your rights and everything is taken away from you, regardless of voting. I wasn't allowed to go to my GPU without getting permission. The likes of going on holidays, you have to get an estimate of where you're going to be, all your itinerary to where you wanted to go. It was too much hassle, so I never done it. Then it was my birthday in June, and I wanted to buy a new phone and a pair of runners. The runners were 90 quid, so all I wanted was a pair of runners and a phone. You know, I wasn't asking for thousands of euro. It was my money, and I should have had a right to access it. So it took 3 weeks to get a yes or no answer back. Then all I wanted to do was buy my own home, like any other normal human being. So me and my family had a meeting with the ward of court, and it was too much hassle for me to buy a house in Wardship. So then we started the road of let's get released and buy my own home. And I was just blessed that I had enough money to buy a house out of the Wardship. You know, I went in 2010. I came out August 2012. I had to go back and see the same psychiatrist. They said I have a disability, and I'm never going to dispute that because there are things that I do find difficult. But with the right help and support, I could look after my own affairs. I'm a person with rights, and I'm not a lunatic. I own my own home. I have a part-time job. I'm a person with rights, and I'm a person in society like every other person.
And that was Claire Hendrick, who was made ward of court for 2 years. Áine Flynn is director of the state's Decision Support Service, DSS, which isn't actually up and running yet. Áine, good evening to you.
Good evening, Damien. Thank you.
As we've just heard there, the way things work at the moment, very Victorian, obviously, even the use of the word lunatic would back that up. Under the new Act and under your service, how will things be different?
Yeah, and thanks again to Claire for sharing her story. I think it is a very clear illustration of the recognised overreach of wardship. So the Assisted Decision Making Capacity Act, which was signed into law at the end of 2015, abolishes the wards of court system, which has been with us in its current form for almost 150 years, as you say. And it will replace it with a modern, graduated, three-tiered framework so that people with decision-making capacity difficulties are able to access the supports that they require in relation to specific decisions about their property and affairs or their personal welfare. And I think we see from Claire's story how the courts moved in to take away really all of her decision-making. That's the true limitation of the wardship regime, that all the court could do when it decided it needed to make an intervention was to declare her to be of unsound mind. And you have heard from her how that meant that even though she recognised she needed support in relation to the management of the money that she'd inherited, she was no longer then able to make the day-to-day decisions that she'd always made independently. So things would be quite different with the new Act. She would be able to access support measured against her need for a finite purpose and under the supervision of the Decision Support Service, which we're now setting up.
Okay, can you just remind us of exactly what is the process involved here in people being made wards of court, and how many people on a yearly basis are made wards of court in Ireland?
Yeah, I think the numbers are between 300 and 400 for the last year that figures were available, 2018. And as I understand it, I know you mentioned the figure of 3,000 there. I think that comprises also deceased wards, whose estates are still being managed by the Office of the Wards of Court. I gather that the figure of current adult wards, and the new Act will extend only to adults, is somewhere over 2,100. We do know, and this is a telling figure, that about 1,250, I think more than that now, adults have been taken into wardship since the new Act was passed, and that's very concerning. Typically, either the HSE or somebody close to the person who is to be made a ward makes an application to the High Court. It's almost always the High Court. And often only because decisions require to be taken around specific matters or a specific important matter where it's felt they lack the decision-making capacity to do so. But again, because of that blunt instrument effect, all of their decision-making, in effect, including routine matters, devolves away from them. A committee is appointed. Clare described that process, and then that committee is supervised by usually by the President of the High Court. And that can affect some really mundane type decisions. Somebody who is a ward of court, you've heard from Clare, can't make their own mind up about applying for a passport, leaving the country. Actually, a ward can't get married because we still have something called the Marriage of Lunatics Act, which, believe it or not, remains in place, having been passed into law in 1811.
What about the rights of people that are being presented for ward of court? Do they have, and will they have under your guidance and your umbrella, will they have the right to resist?
Yeah, that's definitely provided for. I suppose to describe what the new regime will look like, and I try not to get, I suppose, too drawn into a critique of wardship, because very honestly, the people who administer it do so compassionately and with expertise, but within crucial limitations, which is why the Oireachtas made up its mind to abolish it in 2015 and designed a replacement regime. So in that replacement regime, and thinking again about Clare, she could have at the lowest tier somebody called a decision-making assistant, somebody to help her access information, interpret it, and to communicate what she wants to do. The middle tier consists of co-decision-making, a process of joint decision-making, and then at the upper tier there is still a facility for an application to court. It will be the Circuit Court, and the Circuit Court can appoint a decision-making representative. But the relevant person, as they're called under the Act, has a full opportunity to be heard before the court, to be represented, and that decision is very much kept under review. And any order appointing a decision-making representative at that upper tier is finite in scope and is able to be revisited. And any arrangements that are put in place are monitored and closely supervised by the Decision Support Service. The 2015 Act is definitely not an act that is light on regulation.
OK, so as you said, the Act was passed in 2015, still not up and running. What is the problem?
Well, in fairness, there was a lot to do. It's a complex, ambitious act, and I can't speak for all of the agencies and their preparation. The Decision Support Service is one feature of the Act, and it's a core part of it. So the Act can't be commenced until we open our doors. So we have had to, it's a greenfield fight, effectively. We had to design an organisation, build a team. Thinking of the Office of Public Guardian in Scotland, it has 85 staff and a comparable but much narrower function, so that gives you some idea of the scale of the task. We had to design processes, develop our policies, prepare codes of practice for public consultation, and there was a resourcing implication to all of that, which is what we have spoken about today. Our mandate was to set up the Decision Support Service and allow for the Act to be commenced as quickly as possible. And we identified what we saw as a necessary budgetary allocation around that. We didn't get it in the last two budgets. And then we worked, I think, very proactively and positively with the Department of Justice, who sponsors and funds the operation of this Act over the last year or so. the Department of Justice asked us to map out a costed, time-bound plan for 24 months. And I know that's longer than many people would prefer, but it was considered realistic. So we did so. We identified the funding allocation that we would need for that, and that requires an uplift in funding in order to make that 24-month plan a reality. Without it, then we're looking at an elongated time frame and actually a more costly setup.
Well, the Department of Justice have issued a statement to Drive Time this evening saying that it has agreed to an implementation plan which anticipates a commencement of the services of the Decision Support Service in mid-2022. And it says the level of funding in 2021 will be subject to available Exchequer funding, and this will be dealt with through the estimates process. Now, with the financial situation that we're in at the moment, I wouldn't be holding out too much hope there, Áine. What's your reaction to what they say?
Yeah, and we're aware that that is the Department of Justice position, and we welcome the fact that they have supported that timeline and that commencement date, and that they have undertaken to advocate for us in getting that uplift of funding, which would bring us to something like 5.7 million, an uplift of around 2.2 million. I agree. This is perhaps the worst year to be going looking for that. But I think that, in fact, commencement of the Act and facilitating the DSS to come to life is, in a way, part of the COVID response. You know, the people who have suffered the worst effects of the pandemic are, we would say, the same cohort who will benefit from the new support structures in many cases. The Nursing Homes Expert Panel report on COVID, which was published last month, in fact, called for further commencement of the Act. And I hope that COVID has perhaps refocused our priorities. It's made us think about who we take care of, and I hope that that will be reflected in our allocation.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, are we now in breach of the UN Convention of Rights on Rights of Persons with Disabilities?
And that's that's a convention which Ireland, having signed it, I think, in 2007, eventually ratified early in 2018. So we'll be due to be reported on quite soon. Wardship wouldn't survive much analysis through the lens of UNCRPD. I know that under the current operation of the wardship court, steps have been taken to try and allow for the voice of the ward to be heard more and to get closer to compliance. But really, any regime which can only declare somebody to be of unsound mind and incapable of managing their affairs isn't consistent with the values of UNCRPD, which says that people with disability, and that's a broadly designed model of disability, that people with disability enjoy legal capacity on the same basis as all others, and their rights shouldn't be curtailed in the way that it is that their rights are curtailed under wardship.
All right. Áine Flynn, Director of the State's Decision Support Service, thank you very much for joining us on Drive Time. Now,